Eddie, it's so good that you mentioned the kugel we had, just for the people at home, at Salas Shittis. Let's just review. The kugel was made in fleshik pot kalim, right? But they were obviously clean and eno ben yomo, right? So you were absolutely correct in noting that the kugels themselves were pariv, but you just couldn't eat them together with milchik. But there's another complication that we're actually going to speak about today. There's one more problem with those kugels and eating together with milchik or making you fleshik. Well, they looked like they were good. I don't know how they tasted. Okay. There's one more issue vis-a-vis shed kugels. Anybody tell me what the issue of the kugels is or was? Anybody want to guess? It smells like it. The kugels.
The noodles were boiled in a fleshik pot.
Now that was the problem. The pans, by the way, are all single disposable pans, so that's not a problem at all. There is another problem with the actual kugels themselves. Serving them as Salas Shittis, if there was going to be milchik as Salas Shittis, a potential problem which we need to discuss. Right? Anyone? Anyone want to guess? No one? As we give out the seats, when was the kugel served?
Was it served at Salas Shittis?
Before it was served at Salas Shittis, it was leftovers, as all good Salas Shittis says. When was it served? Well, it was served at the fleshik kiddush.
Was it in the same oven and everything was warmed up together? In the oven or on top?
It actually was in the same. It was only in the oven. The only things in the oven were the kugels.
Right.
The challah was not in the oven.
In these ovens.
Right. That would be a very interesting question because that is a closed, unvented oven, but it's not that hot. That would be a very interesting question.
But Paul's kugels were actually those prefab tops
sealed.
Actually were sealed.
Right. Right. And even our challah is also sealed. Yeah.
Before you get started, I'll ask you a shot.
Wait. Is this related? Is this related?
Related.
Okay. Go for it.
What makes a cheese kugel, double wraps it with tin foil.
Yeah.
And she's also making something flaky that she double wraps. Can you put them both in the oven at the same time?
Everyone?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. All right. I feel like I've accomplished something. This is great. All right.
How were they able to put it back in the womb?
Well, that's a Hilchos Shabbos question. Yeah. You were here for that, right? Is it fully cooked?
It's fully cooked.
So what would be the problem? The problem then is not a problem of bishul because it's davar yavesh, so it's fully cooked. The only problem you have is a problem of hachzara, of returning something to a fire, right? And there's another problem you said, a michsei kimavasha. So it looks like cooking. The Rabbanim prohibited you from doing something that looked like you were cooking. So in order to solve that problem, that's why a person is not allowed to put something in the oven. If it was a regular oven like over there in the other kitchen, you could not put it back in. But these warming ovens are made specifically for warming, and they don't, not Shabbos, for warming. And nobody cooks in them, so it's not missing in the vessel, and also there's a maximum temperature, they don't go over. So therefore, the bottom day post can
once you open them up, the temperature,
So this is another very interesting, important question, which is, that's a Shabbos question, but we're digressing for a moment. About what do you do when the result of something that you're going to do is going to be a secondary result? We call that a grumma, right? So in this context, it all depends on which rabbis you ask. Some rabbis say that opening an oven is problematic. It really is seriously problematic because the temperature drops so quickly that the oven is almost certain to go on. But empirically, it's not necessarily true. It all depends on how long it takes you and how quickly you take your stuff out. But what about opening your refrigerator? Is it that same problem? Right. So if you have a problem with an oven, you theoretically would also have the same problem with the refrigerator. The postkin that I have spoken to felt that as long as you didn't, I think we discussed this, as long as you didn't linger in front of the oven, leave it open, you could just open it, take the thing out, and close it. It wasn't a guarantee.
Warming up.
Any oven. Any oven. It wasn't a guarantee that it would necessarily turn on immediately. So you open it, you put your second step out, you close it, and that's not a problem of grumma.
You open it when...
That only works if you have a way of knowing when it's on.
Yeah.
Is there not all of them.
If you have a Shabbos mode in your oven?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. It all depends on what... The problem with Shabbos modes is nobody really knows. You have to look at each specific oven model to figure out what the Shabbos mode is. But I digress, because we were in the middle of discussing the kugel you guys brought up in Salas Shittis. And the kugel itself, while it was parim, made in flechik kelim, remember we call that not bar not, right, remember? So therefore, you couldn't eat it with milchiks, but you could eat it before you had milchiks, it wouldn't make you flechik. What about the fact that we served it at a flechik kiddush? Would that be a problem now for us again now serve it at a meal where people are going to have milchiks, per se, theoretically? Okay.
I think so.
You think so? Anybody else?
If there was a chance that people with serving were using the same utensils, you transfer from one to the other.
There is that chance, isn't there?
Yeah.
Another,
especially with all the kids.
Right, another problem. Right, that's an interesting question. Another question is, let's say you have, I don't know, you're serving Shabbos lunch, okay? This is a very similar, almost identical question. And you serve, at your Shabbos lunch, you serve absolutely power of potato salad. Right, yeah, Shabbos lunch, potato salad. Now, that night, your husband is enjoying a grilled cheese sandwich, and he says, nothing would be better with this grilled cheese than potato salad. All right, he has peculiar taste, your husband, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Can he then eat that potato salad? It is absolutely parv that you served at your fleishik lunch with his grilled cheese.
Well, in
our house,
you would never,
because we have bar spoons. We don't need bar spoons.
At the table?
At the table.
At the table with the fleishik, so it's possible the fleishik got into the parv.
Anything's possible.
We even have.
We're gonna. That is the question.
Going to jellies.
That is the question we're going one of the number of questions we're going to talk about today. Last week we talked about waiting between milk and between meat, and last week we talked about waiting between meat and milk, right? And we learned that the original source was not an absolutely clear source, that the 6 hours is brought down by the Rambam, but the predominant Ashkenazic tradition was, especially in the halachic sources, was
5 hours.
Where were you last week? One hour. That was the predominant Ashkenazic custom throughout much of Ashkenazic Jewry. And only of recent vintage did it become accepted for us to wait 6 hours. Because that was relatively recent.
What's relatively recent?
A couple hundred years.
Oh, goodness.
Well, excuse me, in the halachic
in the scheme of things,
right. You know, the Baalei Tosfot and Arami Rutenberg, they lived, 800-900 years ago. Not 900 years ago, but still, 700-800 years ago. So they only kept an hour. So somehow we got scammed, the Ashkenazim, and we're going to have to probably lobby all the rabbis to get us back to an hour. Actually, the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to keep an hour. I mean, it depends what your family minhag really is, but the Shulchan Aruch says we keep an hour, 6 hours, we keep an hour, but the Medaktikim, the B'nai Torah, keep 6 hours. You know how it is, we all want to be B'nai Torah. We want to be righteous people, so that's why we got 6 hours. So today I want to continue. We discussed waiting between cheese, and we discussed about waiting after cheese, and I want to go back and show you what the source for that was. And also, remember I told you that there was an idea of not eating milk and meat in the same hour. And I want to show you where that's from as well. Says the first part, milk after cheese. It should be not milk after cheese. It should be meat after cheese, because according to everyone, you can eat milk after cheese. I'm pretty sure. Right?
Sure.
That's my mistake, right?
Milk after cheese.
Yeah, it should be meat after cheese. Meat after cheese.
Meat after cheese.
It should say it. Right, cross that out. And Dr. Lorch, if you'll lend me your pen for a minute, in the quick editing process. So those of you who are reading the sheets online, there was a mistake I corrected. Okay, meat after cheese. This is from the Darkei Moshe. And remember, the Darkei Moshe is Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who also wrote a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called the Rama. Right? You've heard of the Rama, right? And it's very important to know your basic Shulchan Aruch geography. Shulchan Aruch was written by anyone? Rabbi Yosef Karo. Rabbi Yosef Karo was a Sephardic rabbi. Lived in Spain. Spain? I think so. Okay. At the same time, almost at the same time, a man named Rabbi Moshe Isserles was also writing a work on the compendium on the tour, a halachic work following the laws of the tour in Ashkenaz, except Rabbi Yosef Karo published his first. So he got first, and then the Rama published a gloss just where the Ashkenazic tradition differed. In addition, Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote a very long work called the Beit Yosef, a very wonderful authoritative work called the Beit Yosef, which goes through the whole subject, the whole thing, and every hour so often we see the Beit Yosef. And Rabbi Moshe Isserles wrote something called the Darkei Moshe. So if you ever want to know why the Rama wrote what he wrote, you have to look at the Daki Moshe. So it says the Daki Moshe. Mordechai writes Perakol HaBasar. And the Mordechai El Mechulin, it says, Tshuvas Maharam. There's a tshuva, a response from the Maharam in Wittenberg, Rameir of Wittenberg, who lived in Wittenberg in Germany before it was destroyed, before the Jewish community was destroyed. Pamachas Nisuda Litsuda. He says, once I, between meals, Matati Gvina Ben Hashinayim. He was taking his tea, right? What did he find? Cheese.
Oh, cheese.
Cheese. Right, remember, meat, everybody agreed, you have to wait. Gazarti, I made a gzera, lahachmir al-atsni, to be machmir on myself, bevasar achar gvina, kmo gvina achar basar. Right, so I made a minhag for myself, I said, you know what, if I could find cheese in my teeth, so I'm going to wait from meat, cheese, meat, I'm going to wait after I eat cheese, just like I wait after I eat meat. Bevasar, oh, if I need make you. But if I'm going to have chicken, then I don't have to figure out when the last time I had cheese. I'd tell him the Shona.
So meat only refers to meat, not chicken.
Right, according to him. According to him. Mezalos and Aisha Beheter Ha'aruch, the Aisha Beheter writes, Gvina Rach, soft cheese, Kodim Z'abu Alav Shisha Chadashim, before it's 6 months old, O Sar Mine Chalav, or other types of milk, Mutar Le'achol Basar Miyad, you can eat meat right away, Be'ota Se'uda, even the same meal, Al Yedei Kinuach, Bhadacha liyadav. Right, you just have to wash your hands. Right, if you're eating, I don't know, you want to have a meal, right? Theoretically, we're going to talk about why you would do this. You serve a four spice of cream cheese and lox. And then after the cream cheese and lox, you want to have meat. You can do that as long as you do kinuach. You rinse out your mouth, you wash out your mouth, and also you have to wash your hands. Really, you tell us or not. Why?
Because you have
cream cheese on your hands, right. You know, it's really interesting that we never do this. Anybody ever have meat and milk and milk and then meat in the same meal? No. No, nobody does it. Why?
I think if you eat a bagel with or lots of cheese, that's enough. You're not going to eat anything else after.
Are you Jewish? Of course you are. I mean,
Because too much trouble to clear everything away.
Right, it's a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
Aval im ocha gvina yishana, but it continues, three lines at the bottom, that you eat old cheese, la'achar she'avu alav sisa chadashim, after it passed over 6 months, o gvina mitula'at. Mitula'at means wormy cheese. I don't know exactly what he refers to. There's a certain type of cheese that was made with mitula'at, means wormed. Is there a cheese that has to rot in order for it to ferment? Anybody know their cheeses? I'm not a cheeseaholic.
Maybe it's like making silk. You needed the worms to...
Yeah, I think so. No, clearly. There was a cheese I had that... It was like a rotted cheese. Mm-hmm. Maybe like original Swiss cheese had the holes? No? Blue cheese. Yeah, what's blue cheese?
Blue cheese smells like rotten.
Blue cheese is a mold.
It's the maybe that's what they mean. Okay. Right. So that's what he says. It's as an element of righteousness not to eat in the same meal. And then you have this custom. So that's the basic principle of our custom that the Rama says. If you ate hard cheese, now what's the definition of hard cheese? Just like the Rama said, it's cheese that either took 6 months to produce or cheese that has a whole long fermentation process, and that hard cheese stays in your teeth. We almost never eat hard cheese. Almost never. I mean, I think somebody said Parmesan cheese maybe is hard, I guess.
But if you buy good Swiss cheese...
Where do you get it?
In New York.
Right, you can't get it in Detroit. Okay. It's interesting. I have an article here from the rabbi of Tnuva in Israel. It's amazing the things they put on the internet. That he writes a lot of different opinions about what's considered hard cheese. So he says, he quotes the opinions, he says, Zman hab salatan so rov hagvinot hakashot ha-israeliot, most Israeli cheeses take chodesh ol chashayim, a month or two. You know, so the vast majority of cheeses take a month or two. You'd have to know specifically that you're eating a very hard, fine cheese that took, you know, more than 6 months to make it. Most cheeses are not like that. But I think, I get a sense that back before production, when you wanted cheese, How did you get cheese? You made it yourself, right? And if you made it yourself, you know, it's like a lot of things. The bread you buy at the store is much cheaper than the bread you make on your own, right? You think of the challahs that we make. So you go to one stop that's full of air and it's cheap and they make it quickly. But if you make it at home, you deep it and whatever, it's a much more substantial. Same thing is about wine. If you made your own wine or you made your own cheese, it would be much more substantial because you'd have your old family recipe and you'd also need it to last you. So you make it once, right? And then the early cheese you probably eat. And then, you know, and as the year went along, it got better and better. You know, and you ate the aged cheese. And that was, by the way, how else would you keep it? You needed food that could stay without refrigeration, which is why they made cheese. Because it would. What? Have you ever made cheese? Have you ever made it?
And if you want to keep it, you put a wet cloth around
right,
it.
Right,
right.
They all knew how to do it, right, right.
And you put it in the cellar, dark, cold place.
Well,
right, that's why, by the way, there was no better food, like, you know, than these cheeses, because what else? You cured your meat, you smoked it, or you salted it, right? And you made your cheese, and maybe wine. What else could you... You know, you had to have a way of preserving all of your food without refrigeration. And I think that's something that we just totally, we don't appreciate it at all because, thank God, refrigeration, shipping, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
Then when you lose power.
Yeah.
So just to quote the Shulchan Aruch that we saw last week, I just want to review it, says the Shulchan Aruch, Ach al gvina mutar l'achol ach al basar if you ate cheese, the source number two on the left-hand side, you can eat after it. Meat miyad. By the way, that's a Sephardic position. Bilvad, shi'ayen yadav, which check your hands, sulo yeshum dabra, megvina nigbabahem. Right, if there's nothing stuck onto it. Why did the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, not write about this carefulness? There's a very simple reason. The rabbi, the Maharam in Wittenberg, lived in Germany. Germany is, how do you say Germany in Hebrew? No, yes. Ashkenaz, right? Judeo Ashkenaz, right? That's the Germanic tradition. You are the original Ashkenazic Jews. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Karo, even though he might have been aware of what the Maharam of Wittenberg said, it wasn't his Masara, wasn't his tradition. So therefore, he didn't say anything. Skip down to the Ramah. See where it says Hagah and the other letters. The Ramah, Hagah says V'yesh machmirim afilu debasar achar gvina. Some are machmir, some are more strict. Even meat after cheese. And look at the quote. Mordechai b'shem Maharam. The Mordechai in the name of the Maharam. So now you know where it came from. Very good. That was very enlightening, and I didn't make it up. Okay? Good stage two. Okay. Yes?
No, I was just thinking, I
couldn't
even home with that book of tea. And if we're going to eat at 6, I'm still hungry. I have a dairy room, cottage cheese.
Fine, right.
And if we're going to have meat, I'm
going to
think twice about how long I wait until...
You don't have to wait at all. That's exactly what he says. Now, remember we talked about last week that some people have this thing of waiting an hour?
Yeah.
It's unclear to me. And maybe it's based on the following source, but there was no halachic source brought down to wait an hour after soft cheeses. It says anytime you want, you have to clean out your mouth, you know.
Clean your mouth.
Clean your mouth, wash your hands, which I assume you do anyway. You're good to go. There's no delay whatsoever. Says, Yesh Yosef Orachayim. He says, "V'yesh machmirim al atzmam." Some have a custom on themselves, or are stringent on themselves. So lo le'achol basar achar gvina besuda achas, not to eat meat after cheese in the same meal. Midnei, so kasu b'sefer haZohar parshas mishpatim zelashono. I'm going to quote you a Zohar. Now I warn you, I'm not an Aramaic person. The Zohar was written only in Aramaic, so I'm going to be able to translate most words. Some I apologize if I mistranslate. Okay, but you'll get the gist of it. Ashkechan, we see, dechol man de'achil hay michla kechada, o bishata chada, anyone who eats these foods, milk and meat, as one, he says, o bishata chada, or in one sha'a, hour, o bishudata chada, or in one meal, if you eat milk and meat in the same meal, arba'in yomin itchazia gadya mikalsa mikalpoi legabe ilun dileila. For 40 days appears a gadya mikalsa, chad gadya, a cursed lamb, the kalsa, the kalpui, legabe inun de la'ela. For this person, de la'ela, up high. It's some kind of curse. Misiyata misava mitkarbin bahade. And misava means rotted or bad siyata. Bad forces come closer to him. The garim li'itra'a dinin be'alma. Right? And it causes bad dinim in the world. Dinim de lo kadishim. Unholy dinim. And so the person have a child during these 40 days after he ate milk and meat in the same meal or in the same hour. Mishmata misitra achra. You know what the sitra achra is? Nobody knows what sitra achra is? The satan. Sitra achra, you ever heard that? The sitra achra? Then the neshama of that child is borrowed from the sitra achra, dilo ihi kadisha. It is not holy. Ad kam shona. Anybody interested in having milk and meat in the same meal now? Or the same hour? Maybe that's where the hour came from. It's not brought anywhere on the Shulchan Aruch. So, I thought it would be interesting. You should just be aware of said Zohar. And if you are careful about Zohars, you are warned. I mean, what do you want to say? I don't know. I mean, I never really heard it before. Eddie's looking at me like, what do you do with it?
I'm not looking at this.
No, you're looking at me like, what do you do with that? That's a Zohar. Yeah.
I don't
eat
milk in the same hour, but...
Yeah, so I'm saying maybe the hour is based on that Zohar. Because he says if you eat in the same hour, you'll have these bad forces that are going to come down on you. It was in Germany, your cousin?
I was from Switzerland. I didn't go to Germany.
Uh-huh.
And there was a kosher place, and everything was kosher, no monkey business.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how long do they wait? And the woman said to me, an hour.
Even from milk to meat?
From milk to meat. She said they waited an hour.
Okay, part two, fish and meat. Fish and meat. Okay, this is something that's always very popular.
I don't know.
I was sure. Let's go first.
I was brought up always that you didn't, until we learned...
You didn't mix it.
In Brachos, with Rabbi Weil,
right.
Learning the Gemara Brachos, where they talk about these things that are bad for you, and one of them was that, and he said, no, that's not true.
Let's look. Let's
and
look.
That's when we went to 1/4 kid.
When this is
when we went to what?
1/4 here.
1/4
instead
of 2.
Yeah, 2.
We used to put out 2/4. One for the gefilte fish.
So where's that come from? Where's that come from?
Where's that come from?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you today. Says the.
This is fish and milk. Does it mean?
I'm on part page 2. Page 2.
Oh, still page 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say part 2, page 2. Says the Orech Chaim, source number 4, Tur. The Tur says, the Adoni Avi Harash Azal, my father, the Tur's father, the Tur, the author of the Tur, was Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Asher. Right? And his father was Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, the Rush. Very, very, very famous rabbi. You know, very, very, very well known. Okay, he says, my father, Hayaradio Lito Yadav ben Basa Ledagin. My father, between eating fish and meat, used to wash his hands. Why? The chamira sakanta me'isura. Because it's not that it's usher to eat fish and meat together. Sakanta. It's dangerous. What's the danger? So the ratio
intention or
hands? It doesn't matter. It's dangerous to eat together. These two things are bad for you together. Let's explain. So the Beis Yosef explains, Mashakasa Abreinu Adoni Abizal Yaragal Lito Yara Bim Basal Adan Chamiras Chantam Yisura HaKol Bo Kasa, the Kol Bo, right? I'm in the top, now the second line in that source. Shagam HaRam Ram Na and HaYanoeg came Mizeh HaTam, he had the same minhag, this rabbi had the same minhag for that reason. V'lo Pirush Mehechan Lama HaRam came, and it wasn't clear where he learned it from. Venira, and I think Shalambu came to the Gassin and the Kate Per Ketzad Solin. There's a Gemara in Psachim. Ahi Bimita, the Itvuye Bahade Bisra. Okay, this Bimita, the kind of fish that was Itvuye Bahade Bisra, that was cooked with some meat, or together with meat. Asa Rabba Miparzakia Lamechla Bekutra. So it was a fish dish that was cooked. We had this in a fleishig pot. Okay, so he said, you're not allowed to eat it, remember, with milk. Mar, this is the important part. Mar bar Rav Ashi Omar, afilu b'milcha nami asura. He says, you can't even eat it, this fish that was cooked in a fleshy pot, with salt. Meaning, you can't eat it at all. Why? Mishum dekasha l'recha, because it's bad for smell, v'davar acher. Okay?
Something else.
And something else. The Gemara says that if you have a roasting fish and meat in the same oven, cooking in the same oven, and remember we learned about recha, how ovens transmit taste, right? So Mar Bar Rav Ashi, he said, can't eat it. Why? He says, kasha l'recha, makes you smell bad, it's also bad for something else. Oh, Rashi says, you cooked in the same oven. Look at the last word. See the last word? Salas.
Oh.
It was some kind of skin illness. Yeah, skin disease. Right. A leprosy skinny thing. Right. Saras. So anyone interested in getting saras will eat their fish and their meat together. And they believe that it was a sakana, it was a danger. It wasn't that there's nowhere in the Torah that says you shouldn't eat meat and fish together. But there's an element of what's called sakana, danger. And since it was considered dangerous, therefore, they brought down the Shulchan Aruch not to eat it. Now this raises a whole Pandora's box question. What's the question? What do you do with explicit halachic sources that are clearly based on science?
On science.
Remember the example we learned about the onions and the peeling the onions and the peeled eggs? Remember, I think we did that one Yom Yontif. So what do you do with those halachic sources? So there are really two general schools of thought. One school of thought is going to say it's science of their time, and that's what they believed. But nowadays, no one really knows any danger of eating fish and meat together. Right? They've tried it, no one got leprosy. Or on the other hand, someone will say, well, but it's brought down. There's a minhag of our forefathers, and we're not going to play with minhagim of our forefathers. And both sides are somewhat appealing. Right? I'm going to tell you not to eat milk and meat and fish together. Yeah, it's very interesting. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch.
What do you mean exactly together?
Together. In together.
You have fish on your plate and meat on your plate.
What if you want to eat them?
You call together.
Fish, meat.
Okay.
What if I had
a
gefilte fish and I mushed it in meat sauce? Probably tastes good.
Right, but you're allowed. But what about the gefilte fish first and then the meat? Two separate courses.
No, that's not a problem at all. That's not, everyone agrees it's not a problem. No. What he says is together, the tam mixed together. Right, it's bad for recha, for smell, and for ras. Okay, you want to risk it? No, you don't want to risk it? Oh, but you'd risk it? Huh? Very good.
It was thought, actually, that it was because...
I wouldn't risk it, but I don't see anything wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Losing the fish, there could still be some bones around, but when you're eating meat, you wouldn't be as cognizant of the bones, and that's not why it's dangerous.
That's not what it says. It says,
and then how guy was brought up with, you can have fish before meat.
You couldn't have fish after.
That's the way I was.
That's the way I was
thinking. Why can't
you have fish after meat? If I ate a piece of meat, I could not have fish after that.
Right.
Okay, I'm not aware of any source in any Alaska.
There might not be a source.
Right.
I'm just telling you who is
out of the economics.
And I'm a honky.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
So let's look, by the way. This is brought down the Shulchan Aruch. Source number five. So this is in the Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole shimon of dangerous foods. Right? One food that we're not allowed to eat is mayim, it's called mayim megulim. If you leave water out, uncovered, overnight,
yeah.
Right? Then you're not allowed to eat it. Why?
Because the spirits might have gotten
to it. No! The snakes might have gotten to it. The snake might have gotten to it.
A snake
might have gotten to it.
Snake or scorpion.
Or whatever.
Excuse me?
Yeah? You also didn't live in the Middle East.
I just think it's disgusting, but then...
Okay, that's one. Another, base. Tzarech lizar, you have to be careful with them. Shlo lechol basar bedad biyachad. Not to eat, here I am, base, which is it? Not to eat fish and meat together. Shekasa lecharas. It's bad for tzaras. You should not roast them. You should recha because of this idea of recha. Remember, recha is the smell, the taste is transferred. But if you did it,
it's okay.
Right, you have to throw it away. So, what do you do with that? Is it dangerous or isn't it dangerous? Well, depends on whether you're going to do it for, you did it or you're going to do it. If you're going to do it, don't do it. If you did it already, don't throw it away. Gimel, Yerchot Yadav Bein Basar Ledag. You should wash your hands between fish and meat. V'yochal Pas Shari Ben Itayim Today Yerchot Shvi. You should eat some kind of like soaked bread between to wash out your mouth. Hagad Ramah writes, Yesham Dein Lachos says that you don't have to do that. Rak Shemavashan Yachan, only if you cook them together and eat them. Amalachon Zeh Achar Zeh. Ain lachos. He doesn't say one. He doesn't say to eat meat after fish. He says zeh achar zeh, which means either way it doesn't matter. So I don't know why. I'm sorry. I don't mean to denigrate whoever raised you, but that was literally above myself.
What, not eating fish after meat?
Yes. How long would you have to wait? 6 months? 6 hours?
You're not allowed to eat fish after meat.
You are.
No, that was
you are. Okay.
You do a lot of things wrong.
That's okay. Halavai that everybody should be so wrong. Dalit, I just wanted to share with you, Dalit, because it's gross. Charli Zar Mizeas Adam. Don't eat human sweat. Shakol Zeas Adam Sham Hamavis. Chut Mizeas Apanim. Other than the facial sweat, which is not deadly. I just threw that in there just for your own entertainment value. Okay. But let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. So we have that in the Shulchan Aruch. It's interesting. This is a very interesting topic of these separation things because they're all over the place. Notice that I'm quoting you in Orach Chaim and then Yoredeya and now back to Orach Chaim. Back to the Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim.
This whole group is in Maseches Brachos.
This fish is not mentioned. The fish and meat are not mentioned in Brachos. There are a lot of things that are mentioned, but fish and meat are not one of them. Rabbi Wilhelm sure mentioned it.
Yeah.
He probably brought it up.
What are you getting to bread?
Patience, my friend.
The what?
Right. What are you worried? I'm going to like flip it at the end? Okay, good. We'll get to it. Patience. Pretty soon, actually. Says the Shulchan Aruch, a few days, source number 7 at the bottom of page number 2. Bein basa v'dagim chova liso. Again, between meat and fish, you have to wash your hands. Mishum dekasha l'davar acher. Remember we heard that? Because it's bad for that thing. The chamira sakanta me'isura. See the language, by the way, when you read it, it falls down. The same language all over again. And this is how you're really supposed to learn the halacha. You're not supposed to just look it up. You're supposed to understand what the source was. Remember, like the Rush said it, he based it on the Gemara that we learned. It was passed down to the Tur, his son. It was brought down in the Tur and then came to the Shulchan Aruch, and that's why we do it. This is the chain of our traditions. It's very, very important for us to understand.
But obviously, there are still a lot of different ones.
Yeah, of clearly, but within the parameter and the chains of the tradition. Right? There are different customs and accepted practices, but all of them are based upon previous teachings. None of them are like, well, whatever. I can do whatever I want. Right? And we always go back to the original... to the original decisors and the original sources. And they might have had debate. There are legitimate debates. There are legitimate differences of opinion.
Yeah, well, after last week's thing, I went home and I said, we're Dutch.
The beauty of Judaism, the power of Judaism lies in our desire to pass down our customs to our children. That's what's so compelling about it. And, it's interesting. You raise a very, very powerful point. A guy came out this year, and he wrote that he felt that in Israel, everyone should be permitted to eat kidneys. Why? Because everybody knows kidneys was based upon certain, fears that there would be grain mixed in. Everyone knows what I mean by kidneys on Pesach? Legumes on Pesach. And that are not prohibited. There's no issue in the Torah of eating corn or rice on Pesach. According, it's clearly permitted. And all these things, beans and whatever, this is all an Ashkenazic tradition. Start to eat all that stuff. Okay? So he came out, he wrote a tshuva, and he said, there should be something called Minag Eretz Yisrael. That there used to be Minag, Spain and Minag Germany, but we're not in Germany anymore. And he felt, it's very interesting, he felt that this custom of kidneys was a great divider between Jews in different communities. That you can't eat here, and I can't eat there, and you got Pesach, Shabbat, and Pesach. I don't need your house, you my house, you have this custom, that custom. And that's why he felt we should have one minhag. And I actually, I mean, I'm sure he's a great Talmud Chacham, and I respect him greatly, but I personally believe that the richness and the beauty of Judaism lies in our ability to find meaning in our own heritage, within the broader parameters of Yiddishkeit. That I wouldn't want to take away somebody's minhag from so long ago. You know, this is what they and their family and their community have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. And that the ability to say, I do my thing, and you do your thing, but still we're the same people, that's a very powerful thing. As opposed to the other attitude, which is, if we do different things, then we can't get along. Now, we have to learn to get along, even though we do different things, and to say, my custom is legitimate, and your custom, as long as it's passed down, is equally legitimate and equally important. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't want everyone to be Dutch.
No,
we're not Dutch. You're Ashkenazic, and I'm from Poland, and I don't know where you're from. Most of us are from Poland, right? We're all Polish.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Russia.
We're all Poland, Russia, whatever. And Rabbi Asaf Cohen is from Spain or wherever. And that's the beauty of Judaism, that we all are within the parameters of the Shulchan Aruch, but we're all still different a little bit. And I find that person extremely appealing.
Yes, and what do you do in a situation, well, like mine? I was raised, we were told we were Jewish, but that was...
Right.
We came from some families of Europe, but nothing was...
Oh, you're easy, because you just take on your husband's custom.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The hard part is, what happens when you have someone who's a real Baal Teshuva, who doesn't know what his parents' customs are? You know, I'm a little bit of that, it's very interesting. My grandfather, did not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, but I do. Why? When my father went to Telz, the Telzers wore tefillin. So my father always wore tefillin, and my grandfather, he didn't know. You know what I'm saying? He didn't know. He just didn't know. And so in America, especially, America is a huge melting pot of minhag, in a sense. It all sort of became glommed together. We don't really have strong minhagim. What's the minhag of this community about Eruv, about Omer? Do we hold the first part or the second part? Nobody
holds them.
Whatever they want, right? Welcome to America.
As a matter of fact, my students asked me if I got just cut a haircut because it curled up a little bit. I said, no, it's a spirit salon. Oh, you keep the second half?
And you're one of those.
Good or bad? Yes, I do. Wow. And they all discussed it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I remember getting an invitation once where someone was making a simcha, and it specifically said, please hold the first half so you can come to our simcha, which was the second half, or it was the other way around, right? I don't remember.
You don't have to. That's not true. That's not accurate. You know, anyway, but let's look at it. So we have this custom, this practice brought down, not to eat fish, meat and fish together. Right? So I personally don't think it's dangerous. I think that the science was wrong. Nonetheless, I personally follow this custom. Why? Because that's what my grandfather did. And he did it because that's what his grandfather did. And to me, that's part of preserving the tradition of and the beauty of Judaism. Unless there's a strongly compelling reason to abandon the practice. It's got to be pretty strong to me. Then you could say, well, you know, the benefits are outweighed by the negatives of maintaining that custom. But in this case, what does it cost me to take a second fork? You know, I got to use another piece of the silverware. It's that nice of the salad forks. You don't know what to do with salad forks anyway. You know what I'm saying? When was the last time somebody only ate salad with a salad fork? No, that's the fish fork. Everybody from knows that's the fish fork. Right?
That's right.
Right? So, you know, it's okay too. Yeah, you can say, I don't want to go on.
I was really totally reformed, and yet nobody ever did surf and turf.
Yeah.
We never did have fish and meat together. It just never happened. So I just followed what he did.
A lot of times, things are ingrained and become cultural, even though they're ingrained from a religious perspective, and they don't even know why.
Right.
You know, like Pesach.
This year in Israel, the people who came from the United States for Pesach over there, and the Israelis only have one Seder. And my son Jeffrey told me that the rabbis, and I don't know who the rabbi was, said you don't have to have a second Seder if you're in
Second Seder, but they still have to keep a second day of Yom Tov. That's true. All right, well, I don't want to go into that issue.
Okay.
As I look at the Magen Avraham, though, it says, Kazal Adavar Acher, on the last bottom left-hand corner of page 2. Cousin the Devarachary says, the Efshar, it's possible, the Bishman is in Shakana Kokach. Nowadays, it's not so dangerous. Even the Magen Avraham's times, you know, a couple hundred years ago. The Chazina Kamer Dvarman was coming with Gemara Shem Shakana, Lebrachra, Lushar Dvarman. There are a lot of things, a few things that the Gemara says are really not good for you. The Ha'idna, Ha'idna, Mazik. And nowadays, it's not dangerous. It's why? Dinistanu Hativiyot. Because the nature, our makeup has changed. And you could say that, by the way, it could very well be that in their time, because of the food that they ate and the air that they breathed, or however you want to say it, that a person who ate meat and fish together became leprous. Right? That they were susceptible in some way. You know, it could very well be that, you know, back then they had very little vitamin C. How are they going to get vitamin C? So the combination of the milk and the fish made the nature out of amino acid that they couldn't break down. Sound plausible?
No,
but whatever.
On the other hand, right. Why has it taken so long to, and I don't think they've halakhically done it yet, to forbid smoking, which is definitely...
The RCA came out and offered smoking. Well, rabbis now are offering smoking.
A long time.
Yeah, when you go by your ship at the door, you see the guys out there by the door puffing away.
I have a big problem with that. I strongly have a problem with that. I do? You know, I don't... anyone who's ever been touched by lung cancer has a problem with it. And if you haven't, until you do, then you get a problem with it. That's all. Simple as that. Okay. Fish and milk. Fish and milk? What?
Yeah, that's what I want to say.
Fish and milk? So there's a... right? There's a comment in the Beis Yosef. What's wrong with fish and milk? Right. So I'm going to tell you. For you, nothing. Okay? There's a comment in the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef says... This is from we actually saw this halacha. Dagim v'chagavim mutar la'achlam b'chalav. Right? You can eat the Torah says you can eat fish and milk, and also grasshoppers and milk.
Oh, good.
By the way, the OU had a whole day a kashrus expo where they had experts come in and talk for people. People came from around the country for this. They had all kinds of exotic meats. Birds, they serve dove, and you know, I'm pretty sure they also serve grasshoppers. Because if you know which kind it is, yeah, sure. If you know which kind, and they're not. You fry them.
My kids in New York.
You fry them. You eat them fried
alive.
You can buy.
Yeah, I think so.
You just put the live grasshoppers in the frying pan.
Probably good deep fried.
Grasshoppers, and I don't know what they do, but in New York you can buy little jars and it's
pickled.
And it's, I don't know what they do.
No, they don't. No. You don't shuck your fish either. Right.
But you knock it out before you kill it.
No, you don't. You cut it up.
Live?
No, they
mail it and give it a good clap.
That's only said it'd make life easier for you. So it wouldn't wiggle out. You don't have to. You can't eat it while it's alive. Okay, so he says.
I used to pick one.
You just have to read this so you can see the quote. Asa l'basha b'chalav chutzim basar. And no meat can you cook in milk except basar dagim mechagavim, except for fish and grasshoppers. Because of Aran came into the bishlan. Sorry, mashma d'la'achol mechalav nami. Sorry, you can eat it with milk. You can cook with milk. The isha basar b'chalav b'lashan bishul afkei rachman. Because the Torah wrote in the language of cooking. Because of Aran b'am b'ashba. First thin line. You can also eat it with milk. You can eat your fish with milk. Nonetheless, says the Beis Yosef, you shouldn't eat fish and milk because it's dangerous. So that's what the Beis Yosef says. Hold on. Look at the Rama, Darkei Moshe. He saves you. Rama says, "Below Raiti Niyamai Nisayim Baze." He says, "I've never heard of it." The Gam the Orachaim Shemukav Ein Gimel. No, it doesn't appear in Kuv Ein Gimel. Ela Shelo LaAchlo BeBasar Mishum Sakana. It doesn't say not to eat fish and milk. It says not to eat fish and meat because it's dangerous. Ava B'Chalav. Sorry, but it's permitted with milk. I am the Kamar Shemukav Damizayin. Menchei Nira. This is what he says. A very funny line. Shenisharim Rabbi Yosef Basar B'Chalav. The Beis Yosef mixed milk, meat and milk. You get it?
Meat and milk?
Yes, meaning he mixed up his milk and his meat.
Oh, he said the wrong thing.
Yes, he really meant not to eat meat and fish. And he accidentally wrote not to eat milk and fish. So thankfully, we Ashkenazim, right, we eat meat and meat, fish, and milk, bagel, and lox. Lox and cream cheese. Some Sephardim, many Sephardim do not. Why? Because even though the Rama says it was a mistake, it's written in the Beis Yosef. So there are Sephardim, very, you know, devout Sephardim, who do not eat fish and milk together. They only eat fish and parf.
And how did they ever come up that eggs were parf?
It's brought down, eggs are parf. I mean, that's brought down the halacha. They're not places. They're not. Okay, bread. Now we come to our bread, and we'll come to our next to last topic, I guess. Oh man, okay, we're not going to get to Shavuos, unfortunately.
We'll stay 5 extra minutes.
We'll get to Shavuos next week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do Shavuos next week.
Oh, next week is still good.
Yeah, we'll get to Shavuos, and we're going to discuss actually a very relevant topic for Shavuos next week. Okay, we're going to discuss next week milchik bread, the concept. We'll talk about it next week. The topic of milchik bread. Okay. All right, we'll talk about it next week. You know, you have to wait. Okay. Nisha'achal gvina, someone who eats cheese, v'roza le'achal basar, and he wants to eat, now meat. Tzarech levayer, see here I am on source number 8. Okay, so the next tzarech levayer me'al shulchan, shiurei pas she'achal ima gvina. If you want to eat now meat on your table, so not only do you have to take the cheese off the table, what else do you have to take off the table?
The tablecloth.
No. Yes, that too. Correct.
Meat dish.
No. The bread.
The bread.
Hapas. But also the achol gvina al mapas achol babasar. You're also very good, Pauline. Very good. You take off the tablecloth. It's on the shulchan aruch. V'chein hefer aser. Okay, and then he goes into, we talked about the knives, about cutting the knives and the cheese with different knives, and this is the original source for the knives as well. So there's a halacha that if you ate, people don't know this halacha, if you ate bread with meat, or you had bread on the table when meat was there, you cannot use it with milchik. No, because we're afraid, the halacha was, we're concerned that the bread. Now remember also that bread in those times especially was used, think about how they had it. They had pizza or bread in the middle, a big loaf of bread, right? And the bread was used to dip, right? It was used as a piece that everyone used and everything else, the meat and everything else, the shawarma and the whatever, was all used to put on the bread. So now what do you do with the leftover bread? It must have had, there's a danger, there's a possibility that it had all kinds of schmutz on it. All different kinds of things on it. So therefore, the halacha says, and this is based on sources.
Cutting board.
No, even if not true, not true.
Yes, I know that you buy a mozia.
Yes.
For two people.
Yes.
But you only use 1/3 of it. You cannot use that. You
can make fresh toast. Make fresh toast the next day.
Excellent question.
Put it in a plastic bag and put it away.
Excellent question. What do you do? What do you do? What?
By smaller column.
Ah. So someone asked Rav Moshe Feinstein Eddie's question. Great question. Somebody asked Rav Moshe Feinstein Eddie's question. Now, by the way, this is absolute. Any cut bread that you have served at a fleshik meal cannot be used at a milchik meal. Okay, you didn't know that? Now you know. I mean, that's halacha. That's absolute halacha. Right? No, you should be glad. Okay, that's an important thing.
Meal.
Good.
Because my next question was, what about sliced bread in a plastic bag?
Ooh, well, if you brought it and left it out on the table, any sliced bread, same thing.
But if you put it in the bag and you open
it, what if you reach in?
Hold on. Now, anything that's, I think, open or available at the meal. We'll see in a second.
Okay.
Somebody asked him, Thank you, Yedidia Nichlab, Rabbi Aaron Jacobs, Slita. Anybody know Aaron Jacobs? Because he wrote Rabbi Moshe a question.
Finishes any cut bread.
Or get there. So somebody said, Rabbi Moshe, what about, okay, he says, Devar Misha Ochel Gvina, Rosal Echel Basar. Somebody who ate cheese and now wants to eat meat. Okay, and the idea is that tzarech levayer shiurei pas she'achol ham gvina. Shehikshel Yedidi says mashma shetzarech liyachet pas lema'achalei basar levad lema'achal chalav levad. Allah men nehar zarmaze says it seems to me you have to have your milchik bread and your fleishik bread, just like you have to have, a lot of people have their milchik ketchup and their fleishik ketchup. Ever heard of that?
No,
yeah,
heard that.
Yeah, no, I don't believe in it. I don't believe it. I mean, it's not necessary. If you want to be machmir, you can, but it's not necessary.
You actually are giving.
Your kids are old enough to know not to put the.
Can't.
Right, I know. You know, I mean, if I have little children like mine, and then they take the ketchup bottle and they down, then that's a problem. But otherwise, it's not a problem at all. Wait, they do the bread. He says, "I believe ha'isur who rak al shiurei chatichas hapas." Only the cut bread where the cheese was eaten from. Or the piece that you cut to eat with the cheese. Sha'alzu eino nisar, because that you're not careful about. Since you cut it to eat with the meal. Even though you know, you'll say, it never touched the other thing. The halacha says no. That's still, it's not in your, not a, my person is not always aware of it, and therefore any bread that's cut at the meal, okay, nonetheless, it if it was eaten with one, then it cannot be eaten with the other.
So it's only when you cut off.
Correct.
Oh.
And so
he says, when, so that's what he asks. He says, one second, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Here we go. Aval. He says, but, these are important words, you can underline them. Pat ha-gedola, but the big bread. Shomeret bein ma'achale chal, bein ma'achale basar, but the big bread that's still, that you haven't cut yet, the zen is harimba, that is what Moshe says you are careful about. En lach ha-shem anaga ba ha-gvina o ha-basar. You don't have to worry whether it touched the one or the other. So, the eitzah to your problem is, don't cut the whole challah.
Right. That's what I said. We have a cutting board.
You didn't ask me. You asked me. So if it's important. If, let's say you have guests over. You invited the smokers for lunch. And you say, I'm going to eat a lot of challah. You cut the whole challah up. We didn't eat it all. Okay, so what do you have left? A bag of cut challah. That bag of cut challah cannot be used for a milchix. Cannot be made into French toast.
But if I cut out three pieces of three
and that's exactly what we do. If you come to my house, you'll notice. Right, I'm going to cut the challah as I go along. Why? Yeah. I love homemade challah into French toast. Right. But if I cut it on Shabbos, I have to do a grilled cheese. But if I cut challah on Shabbos, then I cannot make grilled cheese out of it. If I cut it after the meal, then I can. Now, what about the kugel? We started with the kugel, we end with the kugel. What about other things served at the meal? So Rav Moshe writes, he says, I look inside, he says, it really only applies to bread. It was not meant to apply to other things. We were not afraid that other things, unless, common sense, if somebody's spooning things out with a spoon, right, and the spoon's all over the place, so you don't know what's what, then you can't. But let's say salad. So when I serve salad at my meal, I put in the salad tongs. And generally, people serve themselves salad with the salad thingies, right? So therefore, I don't have a problem saying that unless you know something place you got in the salad, to say you could then have that salad later on and not consider yourself lazy. You can even eat it with milk. It's not a problem at all. Yes, Eddie. And if you want, you can read this from my friend David Brodsky, about tablecloths and leftovers, and he writes it in English. Very, very wonderful. So he writes in English. So now you understand. He says, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes, page 4, that the halacha that requires one to remove only sliced pieces of bread from the table. However, since one is generally careful not to let the loaf touch the other food on the table, one may use full leftover loaves of bread with meat. The Haggadot, as we cite in the Or Zaroah, deems it a mitzvah min ha-mukhar. Mitzvah min ha-mukhar means an extra special mitzvah to remove all food that was on the table during the dairy meal before eating meat on the table. Beit Yosef, Zaroah HaShulchan and other Achonim cite this stringency. Therefore, some have the custom of not using salads, kugels, and other food eaten during a dairy meal with meat. But Moshe, in the aforementioned Tshuva, explains that this practice constitutes a chumrah, a ma'ale leharchaka yetera, an exceedingly great harchaka, distancing, and is not required by the Yerushalmi. So, could we serve that kugel at the Shalosh Shudis?
Yes.
Absolutely. And another reason especially is because it was a serving kugel. It was not really at a table where people were eating, and it had its own utensils. I see no problem serving the kugel at the Shalosh Shudis, and a person would absolutely not become milchik afterwards, unless you had a reason to be displaced. Next week, we'll talk about Shavuos, milchiks, and milchik bread. Have a good week.